We all have to submit, and I hope we submit graciously, all of us, although I know that some of us complain about it, to temperature checks sometimes. We have our temperature checked when we arrive at work, and it gets recorded on a little sheet, and restaurants and there are various places that say, please, can we take your temperature? And you either lean your forehead forward or you offer them the inside of your wrist, and they take a temperature reading, and they say, you are 34.2, or once memorably happened to me, 31.8. And we kind of know that there's not much in that, but hey, if we are thoughtful, we go, the person asking to take my temperature is not the person who made the rule, so why should I take out any frustration or anger on her, him? Let me just do it. And we've all had very, very different temperature readings. I've been into places 15 minutes apart, three different places with three very, very different temperature readings. So we know that it's not much good, but how much not good is it? That's something which we can talk about now as a result of a study done by the University of Portsmouth. And we're joined from that lovely port city by Professor Mike Tipton, a lead author of the study and a professor of human and applied physiology at Uni of Portsmouth, and a hectic Pompey fan or not. Mike, good afternoon.
Oh, hello, John. Yeah, you can't help but support your local team, can you? I'm more rugby than football, to be honest, but I'll keep an eye on what they do.
What Pompey does. All right, so, I mean, yeah, we know that they're not much good, but how much not good are they?
Well, they vary in terms of, for different reasons. Now, for a start off, you know, there's about a third of the people with COVID who don't have a fever. So these things are basing their assessment on the presence of a virus on whether or not you have a fever. So that's one third of the people out the way straight away that they won't pick up. There's the problem of them having false positives because you're warm for some other reason. You could have, you know, had some alcohol. You could have run to the local restaurant. You could be wearing lots of clothes. It could be a hot day. You already mentioned that you've yourself have been from what sounds like profoundly hypothermic to hyperthermic. Studies have suggested that you get as many as 82-83% false negatives. They're not very accurate. Really, the review which we did just emphasized that which was already known and then tried to suggest a way of making it better.
Okay, let's talk about how to make it better then.
Well, the problem with, if you do end up accepting this, is of course it changes your behavior. And if people think they've got the all clear, then they may not be so compliant with the distancing, the face masks, all the other rules and regulations that are there to stop the spread of the virus. So that's the reason for trying to get it right. Now, we know that actually one of the things that's fairly unique about fever is that when your body temperature goes up, your extremity temperature goes down. And that distinguishes from lots of the other ways I've just mentioned. So, for example, if you exercise, your head temperature will go up, but so will your hand temperature. If you drink alcohol, the same will happen. If you're in a high ambient temperature or you're wearing lots of clothes, both your head and your hand temperature will go up. However, if you've got a fever, what happens is your head temperature goes up, but your hand temperature actually gets colder. And people who can recall having a fever will know that actually, although you're hot, certainly in the early stages of the fever, you feel pretty cold. And that's because your skin temperature in your extremities is low. So what we're suggesting is that actually a more accurate way of establishing if somebody's deep body temperature is raised, if that's due to a fever, is to look at the difference between the head temperature and the hand temperature. The good thing about that is that you can use exactly the same equipment, but it would just have to have a bit of software added to it to look at that differential. And if the head temperature and the hand temperature differential was large enough, it would suggest a fever. The downside of it is it's still not going to be 100%. It's still not going to pick up people that have COVID without a fever. It's not the solution. It's not the panacea that perhaps testing is. shouldn't stop you doing all the other things you should do, but it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, my view has been that I submit to it compliantly, and I try to continue to do all of the other things, no matter whether it tells me that my temperature is 35.8 or 36.1 or something in the normal range that it might be. But I kind of go, well, maybe I don't realize that I'm in the early stages of a fever, so I get a reading of 37.7, and then I'm kind of forced to stop and assess and sit quietly in a place where the ambient temperature is not high and go back and have it done again. And if it is still that high, well, then there might be a problem. So it's incumbent upon me not to go into the office and engage with my colleagues. That's the sort of, so I don't see it as being a panacea at all, but I see it as being a not entirely useless strategy.
No, and you know, in terms of the mass screening of people, you know, there aren't that many alternatives in terms of getting something. The problem comes when either you get lots of false positives for all the reasons we've said, sunburn, alcohol, exercise, because then you have to investigate those further, or of course false negatives where not everybody is behaving like you. They're then thinking they've got a green light to go and do what they want and how they want to do it. So, no, I'm not, you know, as I say, as a mass screening tool, you know, it's better than nothing. But, you know, after the 2003 SARS epidemic, where mass screening was used like this, there was a call to try and improve it. But not very much has been done between then and now. And I think one of the lessons we have to learn from this pandemic is that, you know, if there are recommendations for going improving things, we should definitely do it, because this won't be the last pandemic.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your making time for us this afternoon. That's Mike Tipton, Professor of Human and Applied Physiology at the University of Portsmouth.